You're listening to the Bottom Line podcast, where those living with or beyond bowel cancer, as well as health professionals involved in bowel cancer treatment and care, share their inspirational stories and lived experiences with host and bowel cancer survivor, Stephanie.
In Australia, over 1,700 people are diagnosed with early onset bowel cancer every year. Globally, early onset bowel cancer is on the rise. It's now the deadliest cancer for people aged 25 to 44. Jake was diagnosed stage 4. He was really lucky as his GP was proactive and immediately sent him for further investigation. Jake, thanks so much for joining us today on the Bottom Line podcast.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
So before we start, we've just had Anzac Day clash. You are pies and I'm bombers.
Exactly. So we're on even ground at the moment.
We're either both happy or both sad.
Exactly.
Jake, you know these stats because you do work with us at Bowel Cancer Australia. So like me, you know them down pat. How do these numbers make you feel?
I guess it's pretty tough because, I mean, obviously – we know that bowel cancer is one of the most treatable cancers, and that's what makes these numbers pretty tough because obviously, you know, if we can catch it early, it's treatable quite easily through just a surgery and stuff. Sometimes you won't even have to do chemo, but obviously, yeah, the stats are pointing that even the increase in young or early onset bowel cancer, it's not just that, but it's a lot of these cases are being discovered in the late stages of cancer. So it's tough to know those sort of stats, but I mean, that's something that we're trying to, you know, get rid of and trying to raise awareness and stuff within young people so that hopefully, you know, even if the stats do rise and we're still getting more and more people diagnosed, hopefully they're getting diagnosed early, I guess.
Because we know if you catch it in stage one or two, you've got a much better chance of it being treatable and curable.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we'll go. I want to talk to you about awareness shortly. But before we do, could you take us through briefly about your initial diagnosis?
Yeah. So that was back in August 2022. So basically, July 2022, I was living the dream, working fly in, fly out in the northwest of Western Australia. My wife and I were, I guess, just getting ready to settle down. You know, I'd saved a bit of money and would, you know, looking to, you know, possibly buy a house and have kids and all that sort of stuff. And then that sort of got turned upside down in August when I got my diagnosis, which was, as you said, stage 4 with metastases to the liver. It was, I guess, a good example of how to be diagnosed. It's like I was quite lucky, which is a weird thing to say when you've been diagnosed with stage 4 bowel cancer, but I feel the same. Like I was sort of one of the, you know, guys that never really advocated for his health or anything like that. And I was just lucky enough to come across a GP. It was the first time I'd ever seen him. It's not like he was a family GP or anything like that. And he just erred on the side of caution with my very mild symptoms, I think. Like I basically just had a bit of an itchy bum and and I was also probably going to the toilet a little bit more often than normal. And just from that, he sent me in for a colonoscopy, which I obviously thought was a bit overkill at the time. I was expecting him to say, you know, here's some cream for the itch and maybe change up your diet and have a salad for lunch or something like that. And yeah, so I remember walking out of the GP's office thinking this is real overkill, but, you know, either way, I'll go in and get it done anyway. And
did he talk bowel cancer then and there, or he waited till you'd had a colonoscopy?
Nah, I think it was more so he was trying to eliminate some other things, like trying to eliminate IBS or something like that. So,
which is a good thing, isn't it?
Exactly,
because
exactly.
At least he has sent you for investigation.
Yeah.
So where are you at now, Jake? I know you've had a lot of rounds of chemo.
So about 6 months after my diagnosis, after doing chemo and surgeries and stuff like that, I ended up being NED, no evidence of disease, no active cancers, after a lot longer story than that, but multiple surgeries and chemotherapy and stuff like that. And since then, I've been on maintenance chemo, which is still fortnightly. I still go home with a little pump, and I am 37 rounds. Actually, sorry, Monday will be 37 rounds of that. So, but I'm still, scans are still coming back clear. Actually, my next oncologist appointment, I get the results of my latest scan, and as long as that comes back all clear, it'll be just over 12 months clear. So that's awesome news, and it's I guess a bit of a relief if it does come back like that, because I know that the chance of reoccurrence is a lot higher in your first 12 months, I think, than ongoing. But I mean, there is obviously still quite a high chance of reoccurrence at some point, but I guess the goal is just to stay Ned for as long as possible.
You would have had a liver resection?
I haven't, no.
You haven't?
No. The plan was to have a liver resection, because initially when I was first diagnosed, they found two lesions within my liver, and I went and saw the liver surgeon, and they said, okay, after your bowel resection, we'll do a liver resection. And unfortunately, within the 6 weeks of like recovering from my bowel resection, those two lesions had turned into 14. So it was obviously spreading quite quickly over, I think it was about a 6 week period. And that obviously took the liver resection off the table. So I did chemo for, like I say, about 6 months. And after that, the chemo had sort of knocked out, but basically made dormant about 12 of those lesions. And so there was only two left, and I had a microablasion on those two just to burn those two lesions away. And since then, I haven't had any active. So, yeah.
So bowel cancer is something we talked about before that people are not aware of. I know with me, 12 years ago, I didn't know about bowel cancer. You've done a lot of work with us at Bowel Cancer Australia to help raise awareness. Why do you think we can't cut through this barrier, especially around early onset bowel cancer?
I think it's a taboo subject for a lot of people, I guess. People just don't like talking about their bowels and stuff like that. So it is a hard one, because until you're sort of affected by it, you don't really understand how important it is to, I guess, speak about it. I think a lot of people don't know how powerful just talking about it is. If you're sitting around the dinner table, maybe not the dinner table, but
we talk poo at the dinner table.
Wherever you are, but if you're with a group of people and stuff, and you're talking about, you know, oh, I've had these sort of symptoms or something like that, not only would I hope that, you know, your friends and family would encourage you to go and get that checked out, but it might sort of flick a switch in someone else's head and think, actually, I've been having those sort of symptoms as well. I know that's one of the things about my raising awareness, is I think that's one of the things, and you might not hear about it. You might not know that person's, the switch is flicked with them, but you're sort of helping them out without even knowing.
Why is it important for you to use your voice to raise awareness for this disease?
I almost feel like it's my duty to do it. Like I've got, I guess, three priorities in life since diagnosis. One is obviously like looking after my own health and my own well-being. The other is my friends and family's well-being, you know, especially my close family. That's you know, right up there with my own health. And then the third one is just, raising awareness, because I'd hate to find out that a friend or a family member is diagnosed with bowel cancer and, you know, sort of late stages, they put it off or something like that, because, you just don't want anyone to have to go through what, you know, myself and a lot of other people have gone through. It's especially
it's much
when
easier
it's
to do the test or
exactly.
to go and get investigated.
and there's nothing good that comes from putting it off, you know. Like a lot of people will, you know, get anxious because they don't want to find out the bad news. But especially when it comes to bowel cancer, you're much better off finding out bad news early than later on. And, you know, even just a peace of mind in best case scenario, you don't get checked out and, you know, there's no issues. That's best case scenario. And worst case scenario, you've found out earlier than you would have if you've left it, you know, longer. So, yeah.
What would you then tell your pre-bowel cancer self?
I have thought about this before, and I think a lot of people would expect me to say, "Oh, go and get checked out earlier and find your cancer earlier." But to be honest, I feel like I'm pretty lucky finding out when I did. Like I say, I had very mild symptoms, and not up until, you know, like I couldn't have got checked out much earlier, maybe a month earlier, if that. But then I also think, okay, you go get checked out earlier, you see a different GP, he doesn't send you for a colonoscopy. I would have been, well, you know, I was the sort of person that if I go and see a doctor and they said everything's okay, I won't be going back to see a doctor for a long time, unless, you know, things get really bad. So, like, I can't just tell myself to go and get checked out earlier. I think probably more so enjoying life, and just enjoying the little things. Like, you know, I did enjoy life prior to diagnosis as well, but I guess just, yeah, taking the time to enjoy the little things a bit more, I guess, because, yeah, you never know when anything can come up and completely change your life.
That's right. There's, you know, I've had a pivot point, you've had a pivot point, and we've known obviously a lot in our tribe that have perhaps not had it anywhere near as easy as others.
I think sometimes, like, I've thought to myself, you know, what would you have done if you'd, well, just, you know, put it out there to anyone and say, what would you do if you were told you've got, you know, 12 months, 2 years to live or something like that? And I'm sure a lot of people would say, oh, I'd sell up everything and I'd go traveling or something like that, which sounds great, but
it's not the reality.
You can't do that with cancer. Not if you've got, you know, you've got treatment ongoing and stuff like that. So it's a real, you get a really different perspective when I guess you're faced with your own mortality, really.
It's almost like it's the little things in life are not more important, but they become more vivid, don't they?
Yeah, definitely. I think they become more important than they were, maybe not more important than the big things, just little things and just spending time with people, not doing anything particular, but just, spending time with, you know, the people that you love or spending time doing things that you love. So, yeah, like my pivot point as well, it helped me even in those moments think about it and think, just really enjoy this.
You're an incredibly positive human being though, Jake, aren't you? You always look, well, I don't know you very well, but I know you reasonably well over the years, and you always appear to take life with a positive approach.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I've probably been like this most of my life, I guess, definitely towards my adult life. Even more so since diagnosis, which is a weird thing to think about. But as much as enjoying the little things is big to me, I don't fret over the negative little things, you know? Like, there's not too much that phases me within my own life. Like, I'll get more stressed out when it comes to things.
Watching Collingwood and Essendon play?
I don't want as many close games as last season for Collingwood because that was stressful.
Tested the ticker.
Exactly. But that's almost, honestly, that is almost the most stressed out I get is watching sport or something like that. Obviously, you know, during the whole sort of journey, especially like scan results and all that sort of stuff, the scanxiety, even that, like, I feel like I've come to terms with it a little bit more now. Like, I think the first couple of scans, I'd be stressed out from the day of the scan until getting the results, which might be a week, 2 weeks, something like that. Now, I get a little bit stressed in the morning of getting those results, but I mean, I've got results in 2 days and I just don't think about it because it's like a lot of things. If I can't control it, let's just carry on. Even literally when I got diagnosed, like the colonoscopy, I woke up and the doctor came out and he said to me, oh, listen, we found, you know, what looks almost certainly to be cancer. The doctor was surprised because even when I went back for a follow-up colonoscopy 12 months afterwards, he spoke to me about it and he said, yeah, because it wasn't a stressful thing. It wasn't a worrying thing. I was just like, okay, fine, I've got cancer. What are we going to do about it? What's next? What's happening? Like, I don't care about how it's happened anymore. Like, let's just.
We can't change that part of it.
Exactly. So, and I think I've sort of been like that with most things. It's an easy way to stay positive, that, and also, I guess, looking at people that are less fortunate than I am. Yeah, stage four cancer, you don't get too much less fortunate than that, but there's a lot of people that are having a really hard time with treatment. I mean, my treatment's no walk in the park, but there's a lot of people that I've connected with through, you know, the movement Facebook group and basically just online that are just having a really tough time. I remember when I first got diagnosed, I got a message from a single mum who was just didn't know how she was going to continue, sort of thing, how she was going to do treatment. And it basically sounded like, you know, she had to sacrifice her treatment or put, you know, a detriment to her treatment to look after her children and you know, continue working at least part-time and stuff like that. Whereas I've been very lucky with that side of things. Like, I've had insurance, private health insurance, all that sort of stuff. So I've been a lot more lucky than a lot of people and a lot more fortunate, I think, just thinking about that sort of stuff. And don't get me wrong, like, I don't expect other people to look at me and then go, oh, I'm, you know, everything's fine, because everyone has problems. It doesn't.
I was going to say, there would have been some tough moments.
Yeah, it doesn't make your issues, you know, go away, but it does sort of put them in perspective a little bit, which I think is important. And I think that is probably the main way I can remain positive, or, you know, as positive as I am, I guess.
Have there been any tough moments?
Yeah, for sure. I'd say two or three moments in the last sort of 18 months, 24 months that have been pretty tough. The first one was basically straight after diagnosis and telling people. Like, I couldn't verbalize it. I couldn't tell, like, just say, you know, hey, how you going? Oh, by the way, I've got cancer. Like, I just couldn't say it.
It's a tough one.
I think it was mainly because I didn't want to burden them with such heavy news. Like, I remember calling my dad to tell him, and I couldn't speak for a minute or two on the phone, and he was obviously stressing out because I couldn't talk, so he knew something was up. But the thing is, as soon as I knew that people knew, like, even if I hadn't told them, but I'd found out, you know, they'd found out through the grapevine or something like that, I had no dramas, no issues at all talking about it. I think the second one would be when I stupidly Googled the survival rates. I don't recommend doing that ever. But yeah, that was sort of probably a month or two into my diagnosis, and I obviously had a little bit more information of what my diagnosis was. That knocked me around for a couple of days, and I think what got me out of that little rut was thinking, obviously, you know, these are just averages or and stuff like that. I'm obviously young. I can, you know, at that stage, I was reasonably fit and healthy minus the cancer, and I thought, you know, that means I can get more, I guess, aggressive treatments and stuff like that. So that sort of got me out. And then I also thought, you know what, like, worst case scenario, if I do have, say, you know, 6-12 months to live, I don't want to spend it just feeling sorry for myself. Like, let's go, let's, you know, not, you know, sell everything and go traveling, but let's just enjoy what we're doing, you know, go and do what you want to do and see things, like going to the F1 in Melbourne earlier in the year and going to a few concerts. As much as those things are hard to do, and I guess I've found out the hard way that my body's not built for, you know, walking around the F1 for 3 days in a row and stuff like that. Just not so much living in the moment, because it sounds so
things
cliche.
Things that you might about and go, oh, shall I go to Melbourne for the F1? Oh, maybe not. You actually go bite the bullet.
Exactly. Stuff that you might think, oh, I'd love to do that maybe in a few years. Like, you're thinking, who knows what's going to happen within the next few years. Let's just do it now. So I think that's been a good thing that's come out of a hard time. And I guess the final one's still something that's, I guess, a little bit ongoing, and it's probably the one thing that I think about that's not so positive, and that's, it still gets to me that I need help doing stuff and realizing that I need help. You know, like, it's fine to ask for help, especially when you're healthy. You know, can you come around and help me move? Or that's help that you don't necessarily need, but it's good to have. This is help that I cannot do this myself, and I need someone to do this.
How has your diagnosis and ongoing treatment impacted your partner?
Probably even more so than myself, if not very, very similar. Like prior to my diagnosis, we were looking at settling down, having some kids, and just living the normal life, living the dream. But obviously since diagnosis, you know, the having kids has sort of been replaced with let's try and survive, basically, as brutal as that might sound. And there's not a single decision that either of us make that we don't think about the ramifications of what it's going to do to my cancer or my treatment or something like that. Like, I've got my sister's wedding coming up shortly over on the East Coast, and it's not as simple as just going, okay, yeah, we'll book flights and book accommodation. This is how long we're going for. It's like, how am I going to be able to do this? And then, and same for her, we have to make it a shorter trip and we have to be back by this day and all that sort of stuff. And she has to be basically doing the same thing. So it's tough to know how much it is impacting her and her life and just every decision we make. Probably the biggest thing, other than just the general making decisions and stuff like that, is probably not being able to have kids, or and not so much not being able to, but just if we were to ever have kids, it'd have to be through IVF, which I was notified probably less than a week before I started chemo that I needed to go to the sperm bank or whatever you call and save a few vials.
Oh, but they did do that.
They did. It was very because I had planned to have the delivery section, and then we found out that spread was a lot bigger. They wanted me to start chemo as soon as possible, so I didn't have a lot of notice, but they did say. So we have made arrangements for that, but it's still not easy. Like, even, I mean, IVF itself is tough, but also doing it while I'm still getting treatment and stuff like that, it's almost impossible. And as much as I'd love to have kids, and I know my wife absolutely loved to have kids, I'm almost, I guess, sort of glad that we don't already have kids, because it's made, well, I think it's probably made my journey a little bit easier. And that might be a sort of a selfish thing to say, I guess, but
no, I don't think that's selfish. I think that's realistic.
Yeah,
Jake, the reality is, with overlay with a child and having been diagnosed with a 2.5-year-old, it does change things.
Yeah,
so I actually think it's the opposite. I think it's an unselfish thing to do.
I mean, I get, yeah, it's like I say, it's, that's probably one of the toughest things, just not, and it's not just the kids thing, it's the whole, our whole life, our whole plan, you know, like, you know, we got married back in 2018, and you just think about when you get married, and it might not be your plan, but you do think about the future, and you think about when you're older and you got kids, and even if you're thinking even further, your grandkids and all that sort of stuff.
Things are taken out of our control, unfortunately, aren't they?
For sure, yeah.
You talked about the movement before, Jake. I'd like to talk about that with you, because you have been a really active participant in the movement. It's something that we created at Bowel Cancer Australia for like-minded people so they could communicate. How is it finding your tribe?
That's amazing. Like, it's one of the good things that's come out of having cancer is meeting so many just genuinely nice people. You know, I started to think maybe that was a symptom of getting cancer. You have to be a nice person. I've met so many nice people through it. Like, and I think obviously we went to Canberra last year with 48-ish other advocates and obviously a lot of people from Bowel Cancer Australia. And as much as it was an amazing thing to, you know, go and speak to politicians and tell your story, I think the biggest thing that I got out of Canberra was just being in a room with so many people who just know what you've been through. I think that was, yeah, that was incredible, really.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Jake, I'm getting to the back end, boom, boom, of the podcast, and I always like to ask three key points that you would like people to take away from the podcast. What are your three today?
Number one is probably one that people get sick of hearing, but it is knowing the signs and symptoms and advocating for your own health. That's a huge one for anyone that doesn't already have bowel cancer, and advocating for your own health, even if you do have bowel cancer. It's a pretty simple one, pretty cheap maybe, but it is important.
It might be simple, but it's still very pertinent.
And sometimes I feel like there's like my following on social media, they get sick of hearing that, but I feel like if you're sick of hearing it, that's fine. It means you've got the message.
Correct. Consistency, consistency,
exactly.
Consistency.
And there's going to be someone that's going to see it for the first time. So that's the first one. The second one, I think, like I said before, is just enjoying the little things and enjoy the time you're spending, regardless if you've been diagnosed with bowel cancer or not, because you never know when things might change. And obviously, if you have been diagnosed, then you probably already know the importance of enjoying the little things and enjoying time with your friends and family and doing what you love. And the third one is, I understand that everyone's journey is different and everyone has the right to navigate that journey the way they want to. But I would encourage everyone that has been affected by bowel cancer to share your story, because I honestly think everyone underestimates the power it can have. I mean, early on, like when I started posting on social media, and don't get me wrong, it took me a little while too, because it's a pretty big thing, sort of putting yourself out there to complete strangers. But I started basically just to keep my family updated with how my treatment was going, and sort of hope that maybe might be able to raise a little bit of awareness here and there. But the amount of messages I got even early on, like I still get them now, but just the way it's potentially changed people's lives, it's incredible. And I think we can all do it. It's just, like I say, it's tough. It might be scary, but you could save someone's life, and that someone could be a friend or a family member or something like that. So yeah, that's probably my third one.
Jake, they are great tips. I always love chatting to you. I always love seeing you on the movement. Thank you so much for sharing your story today on the Bottom Line podcast. And I look forward to seeing you in Canberra.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity to help raise awareness through this forum as well.
Thank you so much for listening to the Bottom Line podcast. To find out more about bowel cancer or for support or simply to donate, please go to bowelcanceraustralia.org.